Welcome to the podcast Jakty, Ukraine Life. Jakty means in Ukrainian, how are you? I am your host, Lucia Cirki, a former correspondent, now a book author and a freelancer. On this podcast, I'm always talking to a guest, live from Ukraine. The aim of this podcast is to give people in Ukraine an opportunity to share their very personal experience of Russia's full-scale invasion of the country. I am more than delighted to welcome today's guest on the show, Serhii Velichansky. Serhii is a former showman, event host, and moderator. In February 2022, he joined Territorial Defense Forces and fought all over the front line. After he retired from service, he founded a club for war veterans. Welcome to the podcast, Serhii.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
As always, I start this podcast with the question, Jak ty zaraz? How are you right now?
Well, that's a very good question because I'm in my month and a half into the civilian life after the service. So I would say I'm good. I have found again the things I'm meant, that I'm created for, the things I'm called to do, and the things I take a lot of pleasure and joy in doing. And that is the improvisation, applied improvisation, or sometimes people call it improv comedy, but not for the entertainment necessarily, but for the psychological development, renewal, recreation. To answer your question, yes, I'm doing good, thank you.
I'm very glad to hear that you're doing good. Can you tell us, how did it actually came that you went from being a showman to being a soldier? How did that go?
Well, for about 20 plus years, I was in show business, entertainment business, and did a lot of trainings. For instance, back in 2005, I was a drummer for Eurovision 2005 contest with the Ukrainian band Hrinjoli. I was the drummer there, you know, that the most handsome boy on the band. That was me. But then in 2012, I was the official host speaker for Euro 2012. Kyiv, all the games, all the matches, including the final. I was privileged to host the audience, 65,000 people right there on the pitch. And many, many other things like this. But since 2014, the Russian Federation annexed Crimea and part of the Donbas territories in Ukraine. A lot of my friends were involved in the service, in the defending, as volunteers or enlisted, drafted, whatever, but they were involved. So I was, I started thinking and how can I help? I wasn't sure that my health and my age, I'm 53 now, but back then it was, 43. I thought I'm no longer good for the service because I did not have that kind of training and physical shape. So I helped as much as I could with the English language content, creating a Facebook page with up to 10,000 subscribers and Facebook group with up to 40,000 people that subscribe. And then in January 2022, I joined the trainings and workouts of the Territorial Defense Battalion because I already knew, I felt that it's going to happen.
How did you feel that, like back then in January? Because when I did a little bit of research, I saw that you joined like the territorial defense, or that you started training before the full scale invasion. And this would have been my next question: how did it came to that?
So many different warnings from different special services and reconnaissance and intelligence. It seemed like only our president didn't believe it. At least that's the way he communicated this to us. But most of the people that were quite intelligent, observant, could probably say, yeah, it will happen because it looks like it, the way they're preparing their troops, their army, their resources. Looks like this is going to happen. So the question was only when. And so I joined the reserve of the territorial defense. We started communicating, started going on to the range, doing some tactical preparations and stuff like that. And then February 24, early in the morning, it started.
How were like people reacting back then in January 2022 when you were telling them, oh, on Saturday, you know, I can't meet you, for example, because I'm training, I'm preparing? What was the reaction back then of people surrounding you?
Most of the people were like, oh, you found yourself a hobby.
Okay.
I was like, okay, yeah, that's a big boy's hobby. You know, put on camouflage and run around in the village or in the forest, in the factory, doing some tactical whatever. So it's like airsoft, you know, but with the more combat training. Basically, many people didn't think anything's going to happen. Many people listened to the government, and the government didn't really communicate that at all. In fact, they communicated the opposite thought, that it's going to be okay. They don't see any motivation and preparation on the Russian side to attack. So basically I responded, hey, listen, if nothing happens, at least I found myself a hobby. But if it does happen, then at least I know who I'm going to fight with and what commanders I will have. And we will have some kind of organizational structure that I would already know. So, because many people think that it's enough to just learn how to shoot your rifle. But nah, it's not. The modern warfare is completely about teams, about understanding each other, about being mobile, about being disciplined, about trust to the commanders and the fellow soldiers, brothers and sisters. So it's not just, it's very far away from just learning to shoot a rifle. So that was very important for me.
Were there any, you know, specific moments in all this time you have served that had a profound impact on you, looking back on the time you have served?
Well, it completely has changed me. Though right now, even the months and a half passed, I'm looking back and sometimes I'm like, whoa, what a terrible long dream I had, and now I woke up, you know. It seems like, it does look like sometimes that it's so far away, especially first year 2022. For me, the first year was the more difficult one, 2022, because I was a private, just a soldier, a rifleman. And together with our company of about 90 or so people, we were all volunteers. And the uniqueness that we had, and that still impresses me now, we had about literally three higher educations for two people. We had so many people with higher educations, doctors or with different achievements, people that joined. That was a real typical good example of the territorial defense. So together with them, we went. Our first combat was in Irpin, Bucha. Many people know about Bucha, the massacre in Bucha. The massacre in Bucha took place because it was invaded and captivated. Irpin didn't let them in too far, so we held the positions in the Irpin area. For me, it was difficult. I still am looking for correct words to describe what I felt, because Irpin is about like 15 kilometers or maximum 20 kilometers from downtown Kyiv. So it's not far. I mean, it's not far. It's like one of the regions, suburbs of Kyiv. Like organizationally, it's not Kyiv, but it it feels like it's part of Kyiv, because most of our, every other guy on our company, in our battalion, had at least some private apartment or some kind of ownership of some kind of real estate, or they know somebody or they have part of their families. So it is such a close town for us. And in fact, about 3 months before that, we, with my friends, we were there in the park having a picnic. And it was the same park where my first position was when we arrived to Irpin. So you can understand that it's not like somewhere far away there is a war. It's like right here in your backyard. And it was overwhelming. Emotionally, it was overwhelming. And then one of the first times when I saw the phosphorus bomb exploding over our heads. You need to understand that the phosphorus bomb looks like a fireworks. It's beautiful, but it's a hellish beautiful, because as good as it looks, you know, when it's falling, it's gonna burn everything with 800 degrees Celsius temperature. And it exploded right over our heads. And that was one of the moments when I thought, that's just one-way ticket. We came, we went to defend Kyiv, and this is it for us. But somehow, miraculously, the wind blew this fall of the phosphorus about 3-5 meters away from our trenches. So that was a good.
After leaving service, have you ever thought of going back to these places? You know, as they are so close to your home, you're now back in Kyiv, and Irpin is, as you said, not far away from Kyiv. Have you thought about that, going back there and just have a look around how the place looks like?
I had gone there a few times already. When I was in 2022, when I was in a hospital in Kyiv, so I was able to, that was one of my first desires to go back, to feel, to have this, to enjoy the feeling of victory, you know, small but victory. So that was very emotional as well. I brought my son, he was 23 back then, and I brought my son with me to show him where everything, how it happened, and what was happening. So yes, definitely, that was one of my first desires to go and see.
What would you say, what did you personally help as a war veteran, you know, to reintegrate in everyday life, besides like going to the places that had a special meaning to you? What other things helped you to reintegrate after service?
You know, we need to understand that, like, when we talk about PTSD or moral weariness, right? Being tired, right? Weariness or emotional, psychological. In Ukraine, this is something that is very difficult for other armies to understand. First of all, it's the war on your own soil. Secondly, now this is almost 3 years now, and there is no end in this sight. You can't see when it's going to happen. So when a soldier like me joined the army the first week of the full-scale invasion, we were hoping that we'll serve for 1 year and then we'll go back. But no, this is the 3 year. It's going to the fourth year will start, and there is no ending. There is no vision of when the soldiers will go back to their civilian life, because the war is so heavy, so intense, that it's difficult to organize that the soldiers would rotate. Don't have enough soldiers to do that, to do the rotation. That's why people are tired, and physically and emotionally and psychologically and all that. And so our PTSD is main. It's when you're devastated, when you're tired, when you're depressed, when you're down, and then you are again depressed and feel down because of the previous time you felt down and you were depressed and you were devastated and tired, and then again your tiredness, your depression, your loss of faith, understanding of what's happening is again developed because of the previous one, and the previous was because of the previous one. And so you have so many different layers of tired after feeling tired after tired that you just don't know what kind of a normal person you will be when you come back. It's just, it's like a hammer that is shaping you completely into a different person. It's like clay when, you know, shape it up and it then becomes as a stone, and it's going to be hard to unshape it. It's going to be hard to reshape it because of so many different circumstances, the combat and the atmosphere and the situation and the ability to cope with the challenges is that's the uniqueness when you come and when you come home. And if like me, when I was discharged because of the health issues, I came back and we still have the rockets and the UAV, the Shaheds, flying over. So it is kind of like a typical peaceful environment when you come back. You still are in the wartime territory, though we do have visitors, we do have foreigners that come here and there, and they don't see war, Kyiv or even the western part of Ukraine. A lot of things happening, a lot of forums, events, people are trying to, restaurants are working, people are trying to do the job. But when you come home as a veteran, you do feel, you just think that it's such a two different worlds. You know, you go 500 kilometers away and it's two different worlds. But still, other parts of Ukraine are not that safe. You still feel the air raid alarms. You still hear this and that. So that's the to understand the idea of the veteran coming home. It's completely not a typical Western idea when a veteran coming home and just relax.
What can you do, like, what does you personally, like, help to relax at least a little bit? Because I assume that, like, your body, like, being, like, under permanent stressful situations, at a certain point, you just, like, stop feeling any stress. And this is, as far as I understand, also, like, a sign of PTSD. What yeah. are you trying to do so you can at least relax a little bit?
Well, I don't have a PTSD per se. I have some signs here and there. I do have emotionally, sometimes I'm very intense, or some flashbacks or some things like this. Because I was involved for the past year or so, I was involved in the moral and psychological support of the units. So I was helping others. So for me, helping others is a good way to help myself. So this is one of the things, because speaking and talking and collaborating with colleagues, it helps me to be able to observe how they do the work and then help the soldiers and help the units as they either getting ready to for a new deployment or are just coming back from the deployment. Most of the times, it's just there is, besides the words, there is not much you can do. And so that's where the trust issue is a big thing, because if the soldiers trust the messenger, then they will listen to the words. If the soldiers don't trust the messenger somehow, either it's a civilian or, you know, there is this issue with the draft, right? Mobilization. Those, the soldiers, they feel like, hey, we've taken the first shot, we've taken the first hit back in the 2022 and 2023. Now it's, we hope that you, the civilians, will take the baton and move on, and we will come back to the civilian life. But unfortunately, it doesn't happen like this. Somehow, a lot of different issues with the mobilization. Some government mistakes and some mistakes of the army have led to the situation where, plus the informational attacks of the Russian Federation, they're purposefully working towards disrupting the mobilization process, because they purpose, you know, this is like how they do this. They create different messages like, go into the army, you are dying. Okay, so putting this in one sentence, joining the army and death, joining the army, death. People start thinking, yeah, I will die when I join the army, but this is not the case. Yes, death can happen anywhere, but in many cases, people can join the army for different, depending on their education and experience and skills, they can join different positions, not necessarily the assault, rifleman and infantryman or whatever, or airborne or whatever.
You mentioned briefly that you have like a son that is in at the beginnings of his 20s.
Yeah.
Have you been talking with him about like the possibility of joining the Ukrainian army in any future time, or has this not been a topic you have been discussing with your son?
He has already joined. Yeah. He has already joined. For 2 years he was preparing. He helped him join a good UAV training, the drones training. And now he's a good experienced operator of the devices that fly, and either intelligence, reconnaissance, or attacking. So yeah, he's already joined, and that was his decision, and I'm happy. Basically, he said that I was a good example for him in 2022, so I'm proud to know that.
What would you say, what is more difficult, you know, you as a former soldier and a father of a soldier serving currently in the Ukrainian army, what is more difficult, like fighting yourself or knowing that your son is fighting somewhere at the front lines?
The second. The first one, when you're risking yourself, risking your life because you believe in it, because you know why you're doing it, plus you've lived a life a little bit. So I was, 50? Now I'm 53. And basically, yes, the idea was, I'm there because I don't want our children to go to war, but unfortunately the war drags so long that now it's term when I get discharged, and it's his turn. So of course second is much more difficult, because that's your blood, that's your son, that's someone you, your investment, your
of course it's your kid, it's absolutely understanding.
But as a man that has gone through it, I personally believe that a good man sometimes has to make an unpopular decision to, you know, find your part in the fight. And as our former general commander of the armed forces said, it was and it will be difficult, but we will definitely never feel sorry for ourselves, you know. Valery Zaluzhny, yeah.
You did not feel sorry for yourself. Definitely after serving, you founded a club for war veterans. What inspired you to create this space for your comrades?
Because I've been doing improvisational improv comedy since 2009. Since 2013 or so, I started using improv as applied improvisation, as the tool to develop, to build characters, build paradigms, build personalities. With the improvisation, people obtain new skills. Due to the fact that improvisation works on the level of developing new neural connections. That's why the skills are being developed, and they're very helpful then in the life, in the daily life or business. So being in the front line, in 2022 we did one when we were in the Kharkiv area. I was able to do one recreational event for my company. It was a lot of laughter, a lot of fun. Mainly it was the idea to interact, to lift the spirit up, just get some laughs, get some smiles, get some jokes going. So that was a very good thing. And then in 23, I started using improvisation in training with the other units and brigades and battalions, those that work in the area of moral and psychological support of the units. And that's where I started dreaming about developing the project that's called Improv 450. 450 is a radio code that says we are okay. That's the radio code, 450. We're okay. It's got a few years of history, but so it's typical, understandable that 450 means it has to do with the veterans. So it's a recognizable sign. And so Improv 450, that was the idea that I had in my mind. But because I was serving here and there, it was difficult to implement because I couldn't, you know, in the army, you can't rely on your own time or any of your plans because you're under your higher command. But in the summer, I was able to start doing the improv specifically designed for the boys in rehabilitation. So two times a week we would come and we would talk with them, play some improv games, discuss things and discuss the concepts and ideas that improv teaches. Because improv is an interesting thing in a sense that it's not just for fun, it's not just for entertainment, it's much more, much deeper than that. Improv, for instance, teaches that it's not about the situation, it's about your reaction. So every situation that happens, it's not a problem yet. It's your reaction that makes it either a problem or a situation to solve. Or another thing, the skill to concentrate, to be able to concentrate, to learn, to concentrate on possibilities in the midst of hindrances. So learning to look at the possibilities in the midst of all the hindrances that are out there, that's a huge skill, because wherever you are, and even if you are a wounded or retired soldier, then it's much easier to concentrate only on the bad things out there, on the, you know, things that the government doesn't do, or the people, neighbors don't do, or... And improv is really teaching and helping you understand that it's much more effective for your life if you concentrate on the possibilities here and now. So a lot of different things, plus flexibility, quick reaction, quick adapting skills, coping skills to all the new circumstances are, and all those things. So improv is a good like a lecture, but it's fun. Guys love to play, so... So that's why it was not a big matter of thinking what should I do. It was a complete understanding when I come home. Improv 450, that would be That would be the thing to do. The only way is to find the possibilities. It's not a typical situation where you would find, you know, funding or money or whatever. You would so it takes some creativity and thinking and collaborating and discussion with others. But at this time, I already have about 20 veterans that joined my club, and they twice a week they come with a pleasure to hang out, to play, to learn, to discuss and stuff. So it's fun.
Can you tell us, Serhii, what is like the reaction of the war veterans when they come to the club for the first time? How do they react on the idea of improv?
Almost everyone don't even know what to expect. So it's very important when I communicate, very important to tell them that this event is planned. In this event, we don't expect everyone to participate in improvisation. You don't have to. You can just sit back and just relax. You have the right to do that. Or this event is not for the experienced improvisers or actors. So you don't have to have the background of all that theatrical stuff. So those kinds of things help them to understand, hey, I'll just join to hang out. And those that like, then they are invited to come to regular sessions, regular rehearsals and training sessions. I would say I call it a hobby-oriented therapy. Hobby-oriented therapy. So it's not or hobby-based therapy. The hobby, in this case, improvisation, is in the center of our attention. And then the hobby sparks the moments of openness and sharing and trust. So that's what it is. It's a hobby-based therapy that we do.
Would you say, as far as all the people who are joining the club are former war veterans, would you say like the language and the expressions you find there and like all the people that join the club is different and from like everything that they can share with other people who have not like the same experience outside like of the army, who have never been part of the army? Would you say there's a difference?
Of course. A lot of you know, improvisation is about recreating or creating new circumstances or new things, right? New stories, storytelling. And of course, when you are, you've lived for several years in a certain circumstances that are common to all the other fellow soldiers and brothers and sisters, of course, it will be easier just to use this or that term or reference to this or that situation, which everyone will identify. So that's cleverness in communication. If your audience are on the same page, right? It's easier to communicate with them. Of course, we will be thinking of possibly creating an improv kind of a show for the relatives, friends, non-military people. Of course, but later, a bit later.
Do you feel like that at the very moment there are certain questions concerning, you know, like funding from abroad, you know, like for organizations and clubs like yours? Do you feel like that there is less support for organizations, or would you say no, that you are currently at the very moment not like desperately looking for new funding for the club?
Well, It's hard to say right now because of the fact that I'm not so long ago left the army. I'm open for all kinds of different corporations, and I'm even open to visit the forums, the conferences, or different events to upgrade to learn new things in the improv leading, and and connect with new organizations, different organizations that could help. I'm still looking at ways how to manage the organizational and the financial side of my thing. For now, it's just that's just what I do, because I do corporate training, which I charge some funds and I make money off of that. And it's again improvisational trainings, but for corporate clients. And so this helps me pay the bills. But of course, if I find the partner or whatever partners that will enable me to do more and spend more time with the improvisational veterans project, then I would be able to do this not only in Kyiv, but in Lviv and other cities. So I'm open. For now, I have not had yet time to really develop the structure. Just like an improvisation, you make the first step, you keep doing it. So, or the phrase I love to say to my students, if you don't know what to do, do what you know.
Serhiy Velichansky, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast YAKT, and I wish you all the luck in the world for your club and your very important work with war veterans in Ukraine. Thank you very much.
Thank you.